Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to Energy Speaks Back, powered by B2B Energy. My name is Paul Webb, and I'm the founder of B2B Energy, and I'm your host. Weekly, I present to you energy experts from around the world. Welcome to episode 131. Our purpose, as always, is to provide a good understanding of energy management knowledge from around the world, which is available today for us to deliver savings that impact on our planet. We would like to thank utility people who are creating a better career and future for people in our industry, and Esther Energy, who are our certificate partners. Today, I'm thrilled to introduce a special guest who stands as one of the UK's foremost experts in software and AI. Not only is he a seasoned professional in his field, but he also happens to be a dear friend of mine. In this exclusive interview, I delve into his remarkable journey in the realms of AI and software development. So without any further ado, I give you James Brand. Good afternoon, James. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you, Paul. How are you?
I'm very good, and it's really lovely to see you again and be in your office.
Yeah, it's been a while.
It has been a while, and it's really, I love the way you've got all this set up. You've got nice seats here for, you've always had that mindset, haven't you, in your business regarding the relaxing sort of approach to business. I really like that approach.
Yeah, absolutely. I think my office has always been my man cave as well. So
yeah, it has, with all your art as well. We'll have to get some pictures of that later. So James, we have known each other for many years. We should have actually worked out when we met. I think it was around about 2005 we met.
That sounds about right.
Yes. So we met in 2005. I know a hell of a lot about you. I've been to your wedding and I've been to the christenings of your children. We've had quite a lot of family occasions. So I know a hell of a lot about you, but for the benefit of our audience today, can you give us some background and tell us about your origin story, how you got into all of this?
Sure, yeah. So we've been in the tech industry for 23 years now. I kind of fell into this, I guess, when I was 18. I started contracting for Essex-based business that made electronic soldering robots, and my remit was to redesign their software so they could do machine-to-machine communication across the world. And then from there, that kind of ended up moving into energy, and we've done so much stuff now within the energy industry, from working with companies like yours, Paul, right up to kind of massive global energy companies as well.
So what year was that when you started?
99, I think, maybe 2000.
Right.
2000, actually, yeah.
And at age of 18, that's quite a big project to take on.
Absolutely. Not really sure how that one came about. I thought I was going for an interview, and basically they talked to me about the project and at the end said, can you do it? And I said, yeah, sure. So the rest is history, I guess, as they say. At the time, we didn't really have the internet as we have it today. So I think probably after that, I went to the bookshops and bought a bunch of books on programming to try and increase my knowledge and actually deliver the project successfully. And I know today that there's still kind of bits of that system that I wrote back then that are still in use, and they've got machines in Australia, South America, the US, pretty global, and there's still some foundations of what I did back then, which
that's brilliant.
Quite nice, yeah.
Are you still involved with that company?
I'm not, no. I think we did some stuff with them for a couple of years and then kind of moved on. So.
Brilliant. So I can, and I'm visualizing that work that you probably did. Was that done in the famous office where we used to frequent sometimes?
Actually, Paul, that was post that. So back then, the famous office, which is the loft office that Paul was referring to, didn't exist. And this was done from my parents' dining room, where I ended up putting a desk in the corner and doing that. So this is kind of early days of work from home, I guess.
Right. Excellent. Let's talk about those days. And we've just brought it up. And I used to be, I don't like heights. For people don't know that,
And so I goes to James. We were developing some software for energy, and we're at James's house. I meet James's parents, and we go upstairs, and there's a ladder going up into the loft. So there we are in a loft, and I'm on a seat that's got wheels on, and I've got a hatch next to me, and I'm thinking, James, can we cover that hatch up, please? Because I'm frightened I'm going to fall down it.
I think actually after I left the office, my dad did put some metal railings around that.
Right.
But for the few years that I was up there, he was fine with me falling down the hole, I think, on my desk.
Yeah.
On my chair. So, yeah, it was an interesting time trying to start a business. You know, my parents were supportive and let me convert the loft at my expense. Yeah. And that was served as a good base, really, for a couple of years, just while I found my feet.
We were looking at energy management in them days, and we was providing so energy data at the time was really only half hourly data, really, that we could get access to. And what we was trying to achieve, and we did very well, is trying to provide visibility into that half hourly data. And I don't think things have changed regarding, because we're still providing visibility on data and making data more understandable, which I'm sure we're going to pick up later on. But what step change? Can you talk through the step changes that software development's gone through regarding energy?
So I think when we started our journey, Paul, back in the day, some of the sort of technologies that we use now were in their infancy or didn't even exist. And so I think the challenges we had back then was how do you deal with a large volume of that kind of data? It was probably much more expensive to deal with. It's harder to query, and it was more difficult to get insights from that data. Now, when we kind of look at the technologies available to us in the cloud, you know, so much of our life as technologists is based around data, and the tools have really matured. So there's a lot of solutions out there now that allow us to kind of build out these platforms quite rapidly. They allow us to get the insights from the data much easier, much quicker, and at much lower cost. So I think, you know, if we tried to do what we did back then now, not only would our journey have been a lot shorter to get to the market, I think we'd have been able to do something a lot more powerful as well.
Yeah. Well, we was looking at some stuff today, and we was like both raising our eyebrows regarding how can we do that just by typing in just simple commands into something that doesn't really know our industry, compared to what we were doing. And I would agree that what we had in 2005 was very clunky. You know, we had to get the data in via email. That's the only way we could do it at the time.
Yeah.
And then moving at the emails, and then we had to do a lot of formatting with that before we could even get it into the format of a graph, for instance.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at the time, kind of just those data ingestion tools that we have now didn't really exist. So now, kind of, if we were to do that, it's a short piece of work just to get that data ingested into a system. Back then, it was kind of, you know, we were pretty much building something completely bespoke to do it. And it was, you know, kind of 100% RIP. Now it's, as I say, you can just kind of do that with such relative ease, and you know, there's so many people doing that. If it's not with energy data, it's some other kind of data. So it's probably more reliable as well. It's easier to do, more reliable to do, cheaper to do. I think the way we're moving in this, there's some exciting times ahead with what we can achieve with data now.
So we're leaning towards the conversation, which is where I want to take this today, is ChatGPT and AI. And for me, that's been a massive game changer. You know, I've got access to ChatGPT, and I've been exploring some of what I can do with the knowledge base. It really does open up so many different things. We was talking about today, understanding data more and asking queries of that, and we just kept taking it down all different routes, wasn't we?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I think ChatGPT is the first AI that the general public are really becoming familiar with. That's not to say we haven't had AI around for a few years now. I mean, if you think about the Nest thermostat, that was probably one of the first AIs that got popularity within the home. You know, the fact it could fine tune itself to your schedule and things like that. But I think people probably don't really realize there was AI going on there. I think most people have got Siri or Alexa, you know, on their phone or in some device in their house. And again, there's lots of AI going on there. But this ChatGPT, I think, is the first time that I guess people are understanding the potential of AI and its kind of AI in an accessible way. Because, you know, AI technologies and techniques and things like that, I don't think ChatGPT is anything particularly new as such. It's a new model. But, yeah, the actual, I guess, you know, sort of a higher level, this has been kicking around for a long time. But it's been done in a way that it's accessible. And I think that's the key thing. Anyone can go and use this technology, whereas I think a lot of other AI seems out of reach.
Yeah. I know, and I can identify very quickly the opportunities with this. Where are the threats regarding this? Where do you think the problem's going to be? Because, you know, people say about their jobs, you know, and stopping people from, you know, I'm going to go to, for instance, if I want to write a piece of information, I could go to ChatGPT and get it very quickly and already proofread.
Yeah.
So the copywriters could be worried, couldn't they?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we're in an interesting time. And actually, next week, I think there's a conference on AI safety at Bletchley Park that the UK government are holding with various world leaders and experts on this to discuss kind of this potential existential threat of AI. I think there's a number of issues at the moment or potential issues of AI. One is that you can't blindly trust the results that AI is producing, especially something like ChatGPT. You need to have a level of intervention to check that result is correct.
Yeah.
And you know, we've seen stories in the media over the past kind of year around this, where ChatGPT has effectively invented something, or it's made an assumption about something can be completely wrong.
Right.
So there was quite a famous one where a lawyer in the US used ChatGPT to find historical cases to quote in this lawsuit. And ChatGPT invented a case.
Wow.
The judge picked this up I'm not sure if he got disbarred, but I think he certainly nearly got disbarred, and he may have actually been disbarred over it. So, and that came from, you know, he'd used that tool, which was great, and some of what the tool had given him was true and correct and factual, but he hadn't actually bothered validating it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when it quoted this case, instead of going and searching to check that it was okay, he just went, yeah, that's fine, and put it in there.
Mm.
The same with, you know, if you're using ChatGPT to do some calculations or something like that, you know, especially if it's kind of something around engineering or maybe energy or something like that, you always need to, I think, go and check that what it's telling you is correct. Yeah,
validate it yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. So you still need that knowledge. You still need the experts. But really where I see this at the moment is that it's a it's an enabler. It's something that allows you to accelerate what you're doing in your job. So rather than having to spend, you know, an hour doing something manually, perhaps we can achieve the same result in ChatGPT in a minute.
Mm.
And then we can use our knowledge to make sure that that's correct and okay. Yeah. So I think it's a productivity tool is the way I look at that. And, you know, we've got tools like Midjourney, for example, that can create images from prompts.
Yes, that's getting some bad press, isn't it?
I mean, there's a load of issues around copyright and all that kind of stuff.
Mm.
But actually, if you try the tool and see what it can generate, it's pretty impressive. And it's getting better and better. There's a piece of AI now called Runway, which generates short clips of films based on prompts. The challenge with that kind of content is that it's very murky around copyright, and you can't really kind of publish. You know, as a marketeer, for example, you couldn't go to Midjourney, ask it to create an image and then use that in advertising.
Yeah.
What you can do, though, is use Midjourney, for example, to say we're at the concept stage, so maybe we're bidding against some other agencies. We need to knock up some concepts to present to them. These are the themes we're thinking about. Go and generate the images.
Yeah.
Put those into your concept, and that's part of your proposal. You do that very quickly, so you're not investing a lot of time and money into that stage. The client can buy into the concept, and then the illustrators and graphic designers will go in and build that for real, probably not using Midjourney. So it's that enabler there to go and win that business at a much cheaper cost up front to do that, and quicker as well.
It's funny you mention it, because we've just paid a serious amount of money for a company to create a video of what solar would look like on this particular property.
Right.
And they had to get the helicopter to fly over it first of all to create the base video and then to create the next bit. So it was a lot of money to create.
Yeah, so I think in the near future, we'll see probably AI is capable of doing things like that. I was just playing around with Runway the other day, which I hadn't used before, and I just said, can you draw me just create a short clip of a fairy tale castle and a child walking up to the castle, and it did this 4-second clip for me. And another one, I was like, right, I'm in the factory and there's a control panel and I want to zoom the camera to zoom into the control panel. And it went and did that with, I guess, varying success. So I probably didn't prompt it very much and got something that I was like, actually, that's quite good. But I think, in terms of probably doing what you wanted to do in that scenario, I don't think we're probably there yet. But I think the way that's going, it's not going to be, probably long before it can go onto Google Maps, get an aerial shot of the building, and then, create a video around that with the solar panels in place.
Some of the stuff I was reading is also propaganda and, but the stuff I've been reading is it is actually policed quite well. As well as the internet, for instance, so it could be policed just as well. There's a lot of restrictions around it, isn't there?
Yeah, there are. And so next week's conference is really to discuss how data restrictions look on a global level. I think we are in the infancy here, and so we're going to see how legislation evolves. It always needs to be so that it's not restrictive, that it's actually destroying the capabilities of AI, but you also need it to be mindful of those disastrous consequences that kind of get put out there. But I think a lot of that tends to be propaganda against AI or against particular companies in AI where they're maybe doing really well and another AI company is behind. So I don't think we're at the stage where we're going to see an AI that's going to take over our nuclear silos and fire all the missiles. But I think we certainly need to just be mindful of where that goes. And I don't think, just coming back to that point earlier about jobs, I don't think we're going to be I don't think AI is going to take all our jobs. As I said, we need to be having the experts to validate that.
Yeah.
And
also we need the experts to ask the right question.
Exactly, yeah.
Because that's what I was finding. If I asked a question about energy, it could have been if I was a bit loose about the word energy, it could have been talking about Red Bull. What can I use to give me more energy in a building? Well, pour a load of Red Bull on, sort of joking a little bit about it. But if I'm not specific regarding, if you're specific, you get a great answer. And that's what I'm finding, telling it how many words I want to be able to read through, telling it exactly, article, I want to read an article on X, or I want to read an essay or a paper, you know. So if you're specific and then reading it, obviously you do need to be an expert to understand what you're reading as well, yeah, which is what you're saying.
Absolutely. And something like ChatGPT, it's generating an answer based on probability, right? So it doesn't know that the answer's correct, but it knows the probability of the answer being correct is high.
Mm.
And actually, if you're kind of going to, into a lower level of ChatGPT and you start using its API, there's a setting called temperature which you can play around with. And if you set it to a certain value, you literally get gobbledygook because you're saying, don't worry about how accurate your response is. And then as you kind of increase that, you see the probability of the answer being correct increasing. We have to remember as well, it's the experts that create the material that these kinds of things learn on. So without the experts, there isn't the material for the AIs to learn and for them to evolve. So, you know, I think, you know, technology is moving so fast, especially in the energy sector, where there's, you know, lots of different things happening all the time, whether that's, you know, hydrogen or, you know, battery storage and all, you know, smart grids, all that kind of stuff's happening. And if we haven't got the experts generating the content around this, the, you know, the articles and scientific studies and things like that, then actually the AI is never going to learn about them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's another reason why we're not going to see that kind of AI replacing the jobs. You know, it may, maybe it takes some lower level tasks away from people, these kind of mundane tasks away, but it's certainly not going to replace people like you, Paul, because it needs you in the first place to actually be learning yourself about what's going on in the industry and creating content for it to learn on.
And I see that. So say, for instance, it's a productive thing. So if it takes me away from doing X, it enables me to do more here. Absolutely. So they're talking about press broadcasters and things like this. If they can write a news report very quickly, it's going to enable them to do more research and more exploration work on that particular article.
Absolutely. And although, you know, we, as I said earlier at the intro, I've been in this industry for 23 years. And although we haven't really been using AI for more than probably a year or two in any serious way, we've worked with many companies over the years and where we've kind of built an automation of something. And it may be a company's got, you know, one or two people doing this fairly manual, trivial task. You've got issues straight away around staff retention because morale might be low if they're just sitting there doing the same thing all day. Typically low-paid jobs. You know, there tends to be then a lot of sickness as well because the morale, there's leaving. It's difficult to recruit into those roles. And actually, we go and build an automation and the client doesn't, you know, my client doesn't say to their staff, right, you know, you're redundant now. What they say is, right, let's go and do something else with you in the business, because although they may have been doing that kind of fairly manual, redundant task, they've built up lots of experience in the business. They've got good domain knowledge. So they don't want to lose someone that's potentially a good employee, and they just go into somewhere else in the business doing something else, but hopefully actually they're more motivated and more happy. So I think, even at that kind of basic level, it's a productivity enabler. It's not a losing their jobs kind of scenario.
So where are your challenges with AI and technology enhancements? Where's that coming from? Regarding yourself,
our challenges of AI. I think our challenges of AI actually come from a public perception of AI. So I think I know we talked a while ago, and I said, "Oh, have you tried ChatGPT out?" And he was like, "What's that?" And he said, "Oh, actually, someone else mentioned that to me the other day." So I think there's a lot of people that are aware of these technologies now, whether that's ChatGPT, Midjourney, or even some of the more sort of specialized AIs out there. But I think there's still kind of this challenge around public perception, and I think probably small to medium business owners go, oh, AI, that's not for us, without really understanding what it can do. And I kind of refer back to that example earlier of the automation, process automation. But, you know, with AI, there's lots of things we can do within a business, whether that's, you know, if you've got an accounts department that's sitting there inputting supplier invoices into accounting packages, for example. Well, you know, we can use things like document intelligence now just to kind of automate that process. But it's how you educate the companies on that without scaring them, I think.
Yeah. And we just got to, for me, it's the limitations. There's no limitation with AI, is there? And from a business, you've just said accountants, if you've got a process organization, they're making things, yes, you can use it there, but then take a step back, look at your whole business. That would be the challenge for me, is where we plug it into.
Yeah. Yeah, where do you start and where's the best return on investment, right? I think AI has never been more accessible and it's never been cheaper to implement, but there's still a cost to do that. So wherever you do implement that, it needs to have a clear return on investment. And it's kind of building out those use cases of it and then kind of clearly defining what the opportunity is there. And what's the what's the cost associated with it? What's the impact to the business?
As a business with yourself, do you use AI in any part of your business apart from developing software?
I do now. I often use ChatGPT on a it sits in my web browser now.
Right.
And I ask it multiple questions every single day. It's that productivity boost, right? So yes, there's the uses of it in software development where I've maybe got a bit of code and I need to convert it into another language for something and say, right, just here's this code in this language to go and convert it into the other language, which might have taken me an hour to do manually. But just to get ChatGPT, for example, to do that is a minute. And then I have to validate, obviously, that code is right. And, you know, on occasion it's wrong and you have to kind of go back and go, no, you've made this mistake here, or just manually fix it yourself. But even just from as a research tool, I find that I use this now to ask it questions about a topic that I'm interested in rather than going to Google. Because I think that the challenge with Google is you ask a question on Google, you might need to go to 5 or 10 different pages to actually find
the answer.
And
keep searching.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, you'll just be presented with you go to a certain site and there's a massive information. With something like ChatGPT, you get more of that summarized kind of answer. So I find it as a research tool just much more efficient to go to that.
I've been researching some stuff recently, and what I like about it creates an executive summary, then the report, then the conclusion of whatever you're doing. And that is very useful because you can get a really good summary from the beginning. You know if you're in the right place and you've asked that right question.
Yeah.
With Google, it's like the shotgun effect, isn't it? You're shooting at targets with a shotgun. You don't necessarily – and I've probably spent days looking for stuff where probably – if I was to go through that route, the AI route, probably be more direct, more sniper, if I've asked the right question.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, and maybe you just want to find out 5 points about something. So just say to it, you know, can you give me the top 5 points about this?
Yeah.
And it's going to give that to you in that kind of, you know, bullet point.
I've been saying, give me a 200-word essay or article on this particular subject. And it just gives me 200 words.
Yeah.
So I don't get reams and reams of information about something I didn't really need.
Yeah.
I just wanted to know the detail.
Exactly. It's fast and quick to the point. I have seen some stats. There's a very well-known website that's used by software developers, programmers. And I did see that the amount of traffic they're seeing now has massively dropped because everyone's going to ChatGPT to ask the questions instead.
Yeah.
And that's just because it's that time saver. You know, it's quicker.
So I'm going to ask you a question. My million-dollar question here is, if you had AI in 2005, would you have been a very happy man? Would we have got that project done a lot quicker and a lot smarter?
Well, if I had the AI we have today in 2005, I think I'd be a very rich man.
You bet everyone else would have had it, unfortunately.
No one else did. But yeah, I mean, certainly now, I think it's a combination of things. It's AI, it's the evolution of the cloud.
Because you was involved with the cloud a lot, wasn't you, with Microsoft many years ago?
Yeah, so we were fairly early adopters of Microsoft's cloud. So I think when we first started using the Microsoft Azure cloud, there was probably less than 10 services available. And now there's, you know, I don't know what the latest count is, probably like 250 services, and it's really grown. But we kind of went on board that journey early on. We did some of the sort of initial sessions with Microsoft around when they were designing the new portal for it. We joined some sessions and were shown different concepts and asked for feedback and things like that. And then, yeah, we've been a real sort of advocate and user of that over the years.
So tell us about the future of your company, what you're doing now and where you're going to take it.
Yeah, so I think I guess the kind of core themes of what we're doing is AI, industrial IoT, and then really keeping this cloud, which is really, I guess, our origins. And so I think, you know, we're in a really interesting time where we can kind of help businesses use AI to automate their processes. We can use industrial IoT to give better visibility, and we can bring in AI into that as well for things like anomaly detection and those kinds of great things that add value to solutions.
Because you're doing a lot of work in the renewable sector, aren't you? You know, it's not just energy management, it's the renewable sector. What sort of things are you picking up there?
Yeah, so we work with a number of companies in renewables, whether that's startups developing new renewable technology, up to companies that are funding and building renewable generation. So we've been building out IoT solutions where we can we use that to monitor and control the assets, build out data platforms in the cloud that are highly scalable. So as these companies grow, doesn't matter if it's their first asset that or their first product they've sold, or if it's their 100,000th, you know, we can build out data platforms easy now in the cloud that just grow with them.
Right. So James, I've seen your business really evolve. We go back to the loft, from that loft to offices and people and all these different projects, and I'm amazed where it's taken yourself here. But it's come that time in the interview where I'd like to put you on the spot, and you have been on the spot because we've been talking about new technology and new software developments. But is there anything you can give back to our industry today as a takeaway? You know, what should they be looking for?
Yeah, so I think the quick win for any energy assessor is probably to spend the £20 a month on a pro subscription of ChatGPT, and then go and enable the advanced data analysis option on it. That gives you the option to upload data and then to ask it to do data analysis on those data files. So that's a really quick win. You can get trending graphs and various things like that. So that's probably the best £20 a month you can spend at the moment.
Do you know, I was, for the benefit of this interview, I was gobsmacked this morning, and because I know the amount of work I put into that data when I'm trying to get that information, and you just, it's just a question away, isn't it?
Again,
you've got to ask that right question, and you've got to know what you're doing with that data and the format it's in, etc. It's quite shocking. I'm going to ask one more question. Do you feel, I don't know whether this is the right word, scared about what's happening? You probably not, because you live and breathe technology and software, and you've always been on the edge of it.
Yeah.
Do you think it's that feeling?
No, I'm quite excited, I think, by where we are at the moment. And I think, we are kind of on the next revolution, the AI revolution. But I don't think we should be scared. As I say, I think we should be cautious and we should be mindful of what we are creating, but I don't think we should be scared. And I think, I heard someone say a quote recently, which I really agree with, AI isn't going to take your job, but people using AI might. Mm-hmm. So I think if we can learn to embrace it, understand how that improves our productivity, and the quality of our output, then I think it's a win for everyone.
Totally agree. And I'm a great believer of education. And you mentioned it earlier. I'm an educator, so I like to be educated as well. I believe in lifelong learning. I'm always picking up books and understanding. So when we talked about GPT and AI and everything, getting folks on it, I went out and read a book on it. That's me. So I've got an understanding of it. And you're right, we shouldn't be scared. We need to embrace this and really sort of take it in a cautious steps. And I always like the baby steps towards anything, and it's not charging. We can do. I think it'd be really scary if we charged in with it, because if we did, we could be like that lawyer.
Yeah.
Asking the wrong question, getting the wrong answers, and then taking organisations on the wrong journey. And that's the wrong thing to do.
Absolutely. And I think if you're using AI, it's just important to understand its limitations, right? And it's not this all-seeing, all-encompassing thing. It does have limitations. We're still very early on in the journey of AI and how that's probably adopted into kind of everyday life. So yeah. we need to be really mindful of that.
Brilliant. Well, James, thank you for your time today. It's been an amazing journey since 2005. We've had challenges, but we've actually created some really great software. We've helped organizations save significant amounts of money.
Yeah.
We've provided that visibility, and I can see that evolving further as we go, which is really good news, really, for both of us. So thank you for your time today, and please, you and your family, stay safe in these times.
Thank you, Paul. You too.